There they are, the Tom Tom Club, circa 1983. Still one of my favourite tunes, and it is does signal in another edition of the Wordy Rapping Hood. The Wordy Rapping Hood is the name of the tune, and it's also the name of the wireless program that you've wrapped your ears around on this Friday. RPPFM is where you find us. Tracy Hutchison is my name, and the premise of this program is all about finding all the fabulous people that call the peninsula home, settling in with a cuppa and a nice long hour of conversation. And today I'm thrilled to welcome into the RPP studios Andrea Staunton, who is the Manager of Volunteers and Education at the Peninsula Community Legal Centre based in Frankston. Andrea, hello and welcome to RPP.
Hello, Tracy. Thanks very much for having me here.
Great to be able to talk all things community legal centres with you, which we'll do through the course of this next hour. It's a really important work in our community, and particularly on the peninsula. The first question for this program is always what brought you to the peninsula, and I know in your case the apple didn't fall that far from the tree, born and bred in Frankston. So tell us your story.
Yeah, that's right. I wasn't brought here, I just never left. So I was born at Frankston Hospital and grew up in Seaford, later moved to Mornington and then back to Frankston. So I proudly have the I Love Frankston bumper sticker on my car, and I genuinely do love Frankston. I wouldn't like to live anywhere else.
Tell us about your growing up. So born in the 70s, growing up late 70s, 80s, around Frankston, Seaford, Seaford Park Primary, Seaford Carrum Secondary. What kind of a life was that for you growing up in a fairly sort of quiet seaside life, I would imagine that would have been at that time? Pretty uncomplicated.
Yeah, absolutely. I have very happy memories of growing up locally. I've got wonderful memories of Seaford Beach throughout my teenage years, and I still put fish and chips and the beach together in my mind and love it. And I couldn't imagine ever living far from the beach. It's beautiful to see that water every day and know that it's close by. Growing up, it was lovely, quite a working class area, lots of great people, and I have only happy remembrances of the time.
It was an interesting time. We have, I'm slightly older than you, but certainly have similar frames of reference around growing up a bit further down the coast, and then a little bit of time in Bond Beach we spent. But, Rosebud and Bond Beach, but it was an uncomplicated time. It sort of felt like the city hadn't quite come to the peninsula then, and now, of course, we're very much aware of where we are in the world. But there was a sense of it being still very much in a little bit of a bubble in that part of the coast. Was that what it felt like for you? Did the city seem a really long way away to you then?
Of course it did. I remember having birthday parties when I was in primary school, and it was a great adventure. I was allowed to bring five friends, and Mum would take us on the train up to the city, and it was wow. All we did was catch the train and have lunch there and come back, but we thought it was the most amazing day out.
Mm. So that growing up at Seaford Park Primary, then Seaford Carrum Secondary, we know that you've gone on in life to become a lawyer, and we're going to get to that. But what was it in those early days that you thought, I mean, was that something that was on the horizon even then? Or what kind of a life and grown-up did you imagine you were going to be as a little girl?
Well, I think from doing my first play in grade six at Seaford Park Primary, I loved the stage. I really enjoyed performing and acting. So that was my childhood dream, I imagine. Then reality seeped in a little, and I figured I needed a real job, and toyed with the idea of journalism and did a week of work experience with a local paper and went, oh, that's not quite what I wanted to do.
There are many of us who wish it only lasted a week.
That's right. And then as I sort of went through to senior school in high school, I was just really drawn to law and politics and those sorts of social sciences, history as well. So I started to develop a real interest in law and studied legal studies in year 11 and 12, and then went on to study law. It was something I was very drawn to. And I think partly too, going to Seaford Carrum High School, now Paterson River Secondary College, was a great experience for me. I know my parents had wanted me to go to a private school. In fact, the school that you went to, I believe, at Toorak. But I felt like I wouldn't fit in. I just felt more comfortable around the people I'd grown up around. And I think being at that school gave me a chance to shine. I felt like I fitted in, I felt confident, and I always had a voice. And there were great programs. I got to be involved as student council representatives and president and secretary, and also got to be a student rep on the actual school council as well, and to be involved in a variety of ways, which was really quite empowering in retrospect, that I always felt that I could contribute and speak up for my fellow students, which was a really great experience. And they were a great bunch of people as well, the teachers and the students.
And that platform that you're talking about in those very formative years, particularly in secondary, in those secondary years where you're really trying to work out who you are and what you think and where your life is going to go. So getting a taste of doing some of that leadership stuff at school and being very much part of the school community was clearly sort of lighting all sorts of things for you. But it also meant that in 1991 you landed the City of Frankston Junior Citizen of the Year for that work. That must have been a pretty significant, I guess, both acknowledgement but also a recognition for you to think, wow, I can actually make a bit of a difference here. Was that a really interesting kind of shift for you at that moment?
It was. It was an incredible honour, and I was deeply flattered that a teacher had nominated me for the award. I don't think I'd really been conscious of what I was doing in being so involved in my school and local community. And I guess it was a school that wasn't historically famous for having a lot of social involvement and getting involved in things. It wasn't a school that was renowned for academic brilliance or anything like that. It was regarded as a fairly rough sort of a school, yet that just wasn't the experience I had. And it's more in retrospect that I think of the principal announcing to a school assembly that I'd received this award, and I think, wow, how did I not get beaten up at lunchtime? But instead, all I got was congratulations, and somehow I was either tolerated or treated really well by my peers. I might cause them to roll their eyes occasionally if I got on my soapbox, but that was fine as well. I found people very accepting and interested in the work I was doing, even unlikely people.
Andrea Staunton is our guest. She's the Manager of Volunteers and Education at the Peninsula Community Legal Centre, and we will start delving into the work of the PCLC throughout the course of this conversation here on the Wordy Rapping Hood, RPPFM. You were talking, Andrea, around that time about getting on your soapbox about things and your own perspective. I guess that retrospective, you know, hindsight's a fabulous thing, but it was only in retrospect that you've come to understand that the schooling you had and the school you went to was considered a pretty rough kind of a school and a rough kind of environment. What sorts of things were you on your soapbox about then at that time?
I can't remember any specific issues other than I know I went with a teacher and another group of students to hand in a petition to the Environment Minister around using recycled paper in government departments. So
that was 1990?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And so there was that.
Which minister was it?
Oh, I'm afraid I can't recall.
So did you go to Spring Street to do that?
Yes.
Caught the train?
Yep.
That's a big day.
Yeah, yeah. And I wish I'd paid more attention along the way. It's only now that I look back and I go, that was awesome. But at the time, it was just the sort of stuff we did, which was really good. And you're right, being part of the school, and I felt such an affinity with the people around me and felt like I belonged and fitted in and was able to be involved in a great way. In fact, I think my fellow students voted me most school spirited in our mock Year 12 awards.
Wow. So you obviously had that sense of being a leader, being very much engaged in your community, which has stayed with you over the course of your professional life as well. But niggling away in the back there was a great ambition, I want to be an actor. So you were obviously at the end of Year 12, you're thinking, oh, am I going to go and audition for Neighbours or whatever was on the telly at the time, or am I going to do law at Monash?
I wasn't quite that brave to think that acting was a viable option. So I did get involved in school productions and the like. I didn't at that time know about community theatre. So no, by that stage I was very determined to go along, and I studied initially arts and then transferred into law after my first year of uni at Monash.
Few years of, so you're obviously, Monash at that time had a fantastic reputation, still does, was very much, you know, it was Melbourne and Monash. They were the two big places to do law, probably still are in lots of ways. That period of time moving out of what's been the kind of the childhood bubble, the things you know, going off to university to do law. Were you cognizant of how much was changing for you at that time and the world, I guess, opening up to you about the possibilities of the law and what that might afford you in terms of a career?
Again, I'm not sure that I did it quite so thoughtfully. It was the arts I was very drawn to as well as law, but I found, if anything, the arts degree was more mind-broadening and the law degree was more mind-narrowing because we had to fit into existing laws and structures and formats. So where you might find the arts students in the caf at all hours and chilling out and talking philosophy, the law students were nearly always studying in the library, at yes. least the ones I knew.
Talking torts.
And worrying about how they'd get jobs afterwards, because even then the job market wasn't great for law graduates.
Interesting that the arts graduates were slightly more cavalier about that, given the, you know, the tables probably turn in terms of what the job security might deliver for people who might have done arts as opposed to people who might have done law. Andrea Staunton is with us. We are talking her life and times from the Peninsula Community Legal Centre, where she's the manager of volunteers and education. I note that your law degree, your arts degree, you when we were communicating, you said you did German and politics, and you did German for fun. And my recollection of studying German at school, I'm not entirely sure I would have associated fun with it. It's a very structured language and very kind of quite stern-sounding language, so you obviously had a particular affinity for it.
Oh, honestly, any language that can have a lyric to a song that goes vidi vidi vit boom boom, I have to fall in love with. And I thoroughly enjoyed learning German and also learning a bit about the culture, the literature and the linguistics as well. It was just fascinating.
I think the thing about learning a language, the great wonderful, I guess, thing it affords you is to sort of allow your mind to travel to a very different place. And my passion, my great passion at school was French, and became quite the Francophile as a consequence. Andrea Staunton is with us on the Wordy Rapping Hood from the Peninsula Legal Centre, where she's the manager of volunteers in education. And around about that time when you were at Monash, you're just finishing up your degree, is when you first become involved with working in what became the PCLC, the Peninsula Community Legal Centre, which was then known as the Frankston North Legal Service. What drew you to that role? Just tell me about that.
I remember having a self-discovery moment when I went to a lunchtime seminar produced by one of the top-tier law firms about how we could get jobs with them, which was all about getting perfect scores and being the highest in the year when you graduated, and being willing to work around the clock and doing the dream of corporate law. And I just went, uh-oh, I'm in the wrong place. This isn't what I'm studying for. And I literally, with a friend, went to the library and started looking up alternative law jobs. I'm not even sure what we looked in, but I just stumbled across these words that for me were magic, that were community legal centre. And I was fascinated to know more about it, and I just sensed that was a place that I belonged. And I found that my local community legal centre was the Frankston North Legal Service, phoned up, and within weeks I'd started volunteering there.
And what kinds of work and cases were coming through the door in those very early years? What do you remember about that experience?
Sure. So that was sort of around the early to mid-90s, and I recall the clients then, as they still are now, were overwhelmingly experiencing disadvantage. So there were people without financial resources. There were people who couldn't qualify for legal aid but couldn't afford a lawyer. So we were catching all the people in the middle there. A lot of people with family law issues. And back then we used to run do-it-yourself divorce classes. People who were being ripped off with consumer matters. And I guess, although I was less conscious of it then, now after being over 20 years involved with the centre, we see, and we have seen continually, just how much family violence is coming through and affecting clients in a whole bunch of different ways.
You mentioned when you were you had that seminar with the commercial legal representative and ran, you know, screaming from the room, and you said to your friend, "This is not what I'm studying law for." What did you imagine you were studying law for?
Justice, fairness and rights and human rights. And so I was drawn throughout my law degree in the elective subjects towards things like human rights law And it's funny that sort of 20 years on, those are the subjects I remember the best, and those were the ones that were the most profound for me and spoke the most about why I was studying law and why I believe in fairness and justice and want to see a better world.
22 minutes past 12, Ardawa PFM, the voice of the peninsula is where you tune. The Wordy Rapping Hood is the show. Andrea Staunton, the Manager of Volunteers and Education at the Peninsula Community Legal Centre, is our guest on the Wordy Rapping Hood. Let's pause for the first of your musical selections. You've chosen a song by a band called Enigma and their tune Return to Innocence, and it seems whilst we're talking about your first experience actually in the world of practicing law, that might have been, you know, I guess you're coming head on, you've got your head out of the book and you're now actually face to face with real life law in practice and in action. Was that a good experience?
It was, but it was also very confronting. So I remember as a student, one night a lady came into the legal centre and she was desperate to try and get some child support money. She was having trouble feeding her kids. And in my mind, whilst knowing I wasn't authorised to give legal advice at that time, I'm thinking, wow, she's got a constructive trust. She's contributed to this house purchase. She was so completely disinterested in her rights because she could never have paid the court fees. She could never have run it. It wasn't realistic. She just wanted to feed her kids. And that was a real eye-opener for me.
Let's listen to Return to Innocence by the band Enigma. The first selection from our guest on the Wordy Rapping Hood today, Andrea Staunton from the Peninsula Community Legal Centre, where she's the Manager of Volunteers and Education. Andrea, beautiful piece. Why did you choose it?
It's a song that I love, and it's a piece that I find really balancing and grounding. If there's a bit too much white noise in your head, that's a great tune to put on and just refocus and re-energise.
It is fabulous. Andrea, we were talking about your first engagement with the what was then called the Frankston North Legal Service, now the PCLC. What's the core business of the Peninsula Community Legal Centre? What are you all about in Frankston there?
Yeah, so we provide free legal services. So most of our clients, around three quarters, are on low incomes, earn less than $26,000 a year, so they can't afford lawyers. But depending on the legal issue they have, a lot of them don't qualify for legal aid either. So they're really between a rock and a hard place. And we try to fill those gaps and ensure that access to justice means something for all the people who can't afford a lawyer. So we provide a range of services. We've got our head office in Frankston, and we've got branches in Rosebud and Cranbourne and Frankston North and Bentley. And we also do visiting outreach services in Chelsea and Mornington and Hastings. And so people are able to contact us. You don't have to have a low income to seek legal advice from us. Anyone who lives, works or studies in our catchment area is eligible for our help. But we do target our ongoing work to people who are experiencing disadvantage. So as I mentioned, around three quarters of clients have very low income. Nearly a third of our clients report family violence. Around one in five have a disability. And there's generally one or several indicators of disadvantage that are making it hard for these people to deal with their legal problems.
When we talked prior to coming on air, you were saying that people, when they come, when they walk through the door of the community of a community legal centre, and there are many of them around Australia, we're fortunate to have a great network of them on the peninsula. People haven't won Tats Lotto. Life hasn't gone, you know, they're not coming in with great news and asking you to help with the disbursement.
That's exactly
something
right.
Terrible has happened there. So there are all sorts of – what are the most common things that people are feeling when they step through the door to PCLC in Frankston, when they come to see you?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people who are very distressed. Around half the clients we help are seeking advice about family law matters, so family breakdown, arrangements for their children, and nothing strikes you at the heart more than making arrangements for your children and relationship breakdown. So a lot of people are experiencing grief. A lot of people have also been subject to violence, so that's has a very big impact on them. A lot of our clients have mental health problems as well, but even those who don't suffer from a diagnosed mental health problem are at the very least experiencing some anxiety, some fear about coming to see a lawyer. It's facing up to a problem that they wish they didn't have, and it can be really daunting, and a lot of people feel intimidated about seeking legal advice and talking to a lawyer. So we like to be a very friendly, gentle way into the legal profession and a great starting point for people.
It's a lot more involved in a social sense working in a community legal centre in a community setting of any kind, a community centre of any kind. The whole premise of it and the motivation for it is based around a commitment to doing something for society. What you in some ways you need to be part counsellor, part lawyer to work in a community legal centre. Why is it a good fit for you?
I guess because just from what I know of people, it's not that simple. It's not that black and white, and there's often a lot of things going on. So particularly the clients that come to us, some are experiencing homelessness, a whole range of other things. And part of what we do in community legal centres is to, excuse me, look at an issue holistically to not just say, okay, you've got a problem, you're facing eviction because you haven't paid the rent. The legal answer is pay your rent. Okay, well, if you've lost your job or your car's on the blink and you need to get it fixed, so there's other things. So we try to look at the underlying reasons for people's legal problems and also link them up to other services in the community that might be able to assist them. In fact, at the moment, we're piloting a social work program. So we have a social worker based at the legal centre who's able to help clients with their non-legal issues that might be causing their problems to worsen.
Identifying what some of those additional education programs and support programs needs to be is very much part of what the role of the Community Legal Centre is all about, and your role in managing your volunteers and your education is about both selling the message but also making sure that the people who need the service most know that you're there. The kinds of things that you're focusing on at the moment, have they been a constant over the 20 years that you've been involved with the centre?
Yeah, so I guess a primary part of our community legal education is simply about raising awareness about the types of things that are legal problems that you can get help for from a lawyer, and encouraging people to seek that legal advice from a lawyer. There's been research recently by the Law and Justice Foundation of New South Wales that shows that around half of Australians experience a legal problem in any given year. But there's a real disproportionality in terms of who experiences the most legal problems and the most severe problems, and that is disadvantaged people. So we know that these people have the greatest legal need, but they're also the people least likely to seek help. So through our community legal education, we try to reach out to them. So we visit a range of different groups, and we also do a lot of work with community workers and other professionals who are assisting disadvantaged people so that they can identify the sorts of legal issues their clients have and refer them in for help.
Some of the programs that I know that you're running at the moment are you're doing obviously through the community education, but one of them particularly around family violence, and we've seen that be very much in the spotlight in more recent years through the now former Australian of the Year Rosie Batty, Tyab resident, and came into the news for all the wrong reasons through the death of her son at the hands of her former partner. What approach can a community legal centre take in terms of contributing both to behavioural issues but education issues? How can you help?
So look, Rosie Batty is of course absolutely inspirational, and I've been very privileged to meet and work with her. Her advocacy around family violence has been just amazing, and I think we have her to thank not only for the progress we're making in relation to family violence, but also because she's been outspoken about the need for funding for community legal centres like ours and those across Australia who are actually facing funding cuts from the 1st of July next year. So she's been a wonderful advocate for the importance of free legal help. In terms of family violence and the work that we're doing around that, that's a big part of our community legal education. It's always been present in the sorts of work that we're doing and the clients that we help. So we're doing things like at the moment, we're putting together workshops for people who have experienced family violence to help them know about some of their legal options around things like tenancies, around victims of crime compensation, as well as the more obvious things like intervention orders and family law arrangements. We're also doing work with men's behaviour change programs to try and help men who are subject to intervention orders to understand what it is that they're not allowed to do so that they don't accidentally breach those orders just because they haven't understood them. And also to link everyone into legal help so that they can find out exactly what's expected of them and what they need to do.
In your experience at the Community Legal Centre, how much of those breaches that you've just mentioned, how high is the incidence of that simply because people how much of it is willful and how much of it is simply some confusion or lack of understanding about why this has happened and what the parameters and are around those behaviours.
I wouldn't be able to quantify it. We certainly know that both occur, and we certainly hear from a lot of women that there are a lot of breaches where they've not been able to take action, or they themselves have misunderstood the terms of the orders. So we know that there's some degree of accidental breach, and that's what we're hearing from the professionals and the presenters of men's behaviour change programs, that sometimes they just don't understand what's required, or they're badly worded. And so it's a little confusing and unclear. People who want to breach willfully, there's not much the law can do or that education can do around that, but we can try and help the people who are meaning to do the right thing but trip up.
Andrea Staunton's with us from the Peninsula Community Legal Centre, the Manager of Volunteers and Education. The other program that you're running at the moment, which has got the fabulous title, The Wills Lingo Bingo for Seniors, which I love the sound of that. Does that mean I go to bingo and I find out about that? Or
no, absolutely. The Wills Lingo Bingo is a favourite of mine, although I can't take credit for the concept. Eastern Community Legal Centre put together a tool called Legal Lingo Bingo, which was a fun way of engaging with community members and helping explain legal concepts. So we customised it to Wills Lingo Bingo. So instead of numbers on your bingo board, there are words like beneficiary, executor, intestacy, and we draw them out of a barrel, and as each one comes up, we talk about what that means and what some of the legal issues around that are. Right. So that's been a popular one. I think we've delivered that to several hundred seniors around the peninsula now, and it's part of a program that we're doing with Senior Rights Victoria to raise awareness of elder abuse and let people know where they can get help, but also to talk about powers of attorney and wills, which are important lifetime planning issues.
Absolutely. You've been involved now with the Peninsula Community Legal Centre, as it's now known. Originally the Frankston North Legal Centre, for 2 decades.
Yeah.
20 years. So it's pretty much the place you've called home. You would have seen a lot of thousands of people come through the door over that period of time. What's been, I guess, the greatest challenge that you've seen for the Community Legal Centre working with clients over that time?
I think for us the hardest thing we ever have to do is say no, when we want to help everybody and we just don't have the resources to do it. So that's been a constant throughout the time. Our centre's now one of the largest community legal centres in Australia, and we offer quite a large suite of services. And we have a really large volunteer program with around 70 lawyers and 70 student volunteers. That means we're open 4 nights a week as well to provide free legal advice. But there's still a huge number of people that we're not able to help to the level that they need. We might be giving them advice where they need ongoing assistance because we somehow just have to prioritise. And that's really hard to do. We're all there because we want to help people. And sometimes we have to do the little we can instead of the lot that we want to do.
Mm. I would imagine that on a personal level, there's probably been a lot of times where you've had to work very hard to separate the personal from the professional. And I won't draw you too much on some of what have been probably quite difficult challenges. But I imagine there's been a lot of wins for you as well over that time. Is there a particular case or type of issue that you feel that the Community Legal Centre and through your work and involvement has had a big win over that time?
It's hard to say big. I think it's one of those things where we can't help, we haven't been able to fix everything, but we fixed some things. And so it would be more individual stories of particular clients that we've helped. And sometimes it's the most modest legal issues that actually can have the biggest impact on people. So for example, one time a man came in and he'd been stewing on this issue for 3 years before he came to see us, and it was a fencing problem. But he was elderly, he didn't have transport, he was caring for a wife who had Alzheimer's, he was frightened of his neighbours, he didn't know who owned the property, they were tenants, and it was keeping him up at night worrying about this fence. And he finally came to see us, and one of our volunteer lawyers was able to help him. We did a title search, we found out who owned the property, we wrote to them, we organised for the co-payment of a fence. It was one of the simplest files we've ever run, yet it made a world of difference to him. It meant that he could sleep at night and feel safer because he had a strong and appropriate fence. So that's one of the smallest things we've done, but it made a big difference to that man. And I guess in terms of the community legal education work that I've done as well, I think one of the loveliest things I ever did was to present a workshop to some newly arrived people. So we were talking all about the Australian legal system and how police are separate to the military and they have to follow laws as well, and talking about a whole range of things. And then afterwards they did a class exercise where they all wrote me a letter. And the things they wrote were so moving. Some of them said, I now feel safer in this country and I know where I can get help. And that meant the world to me.
Andrea Staunton is with us from the Peninsula Community Legal Centre, talking about how she found her way to the law and also the work that she does on a daily basis with a terrific contributor to our community here on the Peninsula. A little musical break. We're kind of rapidly heading toward our 1 o'clock end time, but I'm going to squeeze a little bit of this one in because there's another track I want to play from your selection as well. But one of the tracks you selected was by a band called Scorpions, but the track itself was actually the thing that drove you to the song called Wind of Change. And you said it reminded you very much of some good things, in fact, that were happening in Europe at the time, where you felt quite connected to this song, as opposed to some of the things we're seeing now in the wake overnight of the death of the British MP who's sadly been shot campaigning for a united Europe. But this one was about, I guess, bringing down the walls and unifying Europe. Why was this such a song for you to have such resonance?
That's exactly right. It's such a song of peace and hope that I can never get sick of, no matter how many times I listen to it. It makes me think of the Berlin Wall coming down and the end of the Cold War, and it gives me hope.
Let's think about a happier, more positive, unified Europe as we listen to this on RPPFM. Well, let's hope it bodes well for Europe at the moment. Certainly very trying times with the Brexit debate and the death overnight of a British MP, a Labour MP, 41 years old, campaigning in her constituency in Yorkshire. Very, very troubling times indeed. But it's 12 minutes to one and we're on RPPFM, and that was a band called Scorpions and the song from them called Winds of Change, which is another selection of our guest on the Wordy Rapping Hood on this Friday, Andrea Staunton from the Peninsula Community Legal Centre, where she's the Manager of Volunteers in Education. And we've talked a lot during the course of this chat, Andrea, about your great passion for the law and your great passion for the community in which you grew up and still practice law in. But I do know that there was a period of time where you thought, I'm going to go and give this acting a little bit of a go, and which delivered you a couple of fabulous on-screen credits, namely Passerby number 2 in Neighbours and Patron Drinking in Lou's Pub in Stingers.
No, that was Neighbours as well. Neighbours. I did get to be a patron in a bowling alley in Stingers, so if I looked familiar, that's probably why.
I did. As soon as I met you, I thought, oh, I remember her. It was Passerby number 2 in Neighbours. So that was 2001. It was the 6 months giving it a go in your acting career, and clearly you opted for the sensible choice and went back to the law. But obviously that remains a great passion, because you remain very involved in community theatre, and it's a great love of yours.
You're absolutely right. So after my dismal failure of an acting career and my discovery that I needed to somehow still pay the mortgage, I was lucky enough to
terrible
start.
That mortgage,
it's a bit harsh. I was lucky enough to start working in a paid capacity as the Manager of Volunteers at Peninsula Community Legal Centre on a part-time basis, which enabled me to still do some of those distinguished extras roles. But also I discovered community theatre, and I'm proud to be part of the committee of Frankston Theatre Group. And I've also been involved in Mordialloc Theatre Company and the Southern Peninsula Players. And that's a wonderful world. For anyone who's feeling a bit shy out there, get involved in community theatre, or at least come and see our shows. It's also how I've met lots of great friends, and including my husband.
Well, then it obviously worked. And I think that that particular, would you remind us of the production that that you met your husband in and what roles you were actually playing?
That's right. Well, that was a play back in 2003 called Dolly West's Kitchen. And I was an Irish maid and my now husband was an American soldier. Mm. It was wartime.
Mm. You know what happens. How did he go with an Irish accent? Well, who had the Irish
accent? I had the Irish accent. He had an American accent. So wow. It was such a shock to me. We had a strict director, so we spoke in accents through all the breaks from the moment we arrived to the moment we left. So when I first heard him speak with his Northern English accent, it was a complete shock to me.
It would have been. You walked in here to the studios of RPPFM and mentioned that there's a radio play that you putting your hand up for or something that's going on.
That's
here.
That's right. There's just been an audition notice come out recently for the Mornington Peninsula Theatre community on Facebook saying they're looking for auditionees for a radio play. So I think that would be a great lot of fun.
Would be a great lot of fun. We're about 8 minutes to one. One of the things, Andrea, you said to me when we were talking about coming on the wireless and talking about your work, you think, oh, I can't possibly speak for an hour. And you've managed to do it in spades. You were talking about your great love of the law, obviously very, very committed to community and very committed to the community that you grew up in. Living, working, acting, performing, mothering, being a wife, being very much engaged in the community that you have called home since day one. Why do you stay? Well, you could, as a lawyer, you could practice anywhere, particularly with a commitment to social justice. You could have taken your legal skills anywhere in the world. Why here? Why Frankston? Why has it been so important to you to stay?
I just love my community so much. So it means the world to me to be able to be not just helping improve access to justice, but helping to do it for Frankston and the Mornington Peninsula and the place I grew up and the place that I love to call home. I do care about justice issues more broadly, but I particularly care about the ones close to home and want to serve my own community.
One of the great challenges being very passionate and being very idealistic about the chosen profession and this seems to be a constant with people who choose law, is that very often the legal system delivers quite the opposite of the reason that you were drawn to the career in the first place. How do you reconcile the capacity of the legal system to actually be very unjust to people who need it most?
That's incredibly difficult, and it's a bitter pill to swallow that by trying to improve fairness and social justice, what you actually expose yourself to is seeing continual cases of injustice. Nothing makes my blood boil more than the abuse of powers, particularly by people in authority like police. But then it's one of those things where there's so much good being done as well. And that's one of the most amazing things about community legal centres, that if we can see laws impacting very negatively on our clients or on a disadvantaged group in society, we'll be vocal about that and we'll try and effect change and reform and with some success. So if we can see it's wrong, we try to fix it and we try and tell people and we're pretty loud about that.
Well, it's been a great pleasure talking with you today about the work, both your work and the work of the organisation that you're part of, broadly speaking, the community legal centres around Australia. We're very lucky to have them and lucky that they continue to be funded. And that is a whole other conversation. And we hope that we don't have to keep having that conversation. But Andrea Staunton, in her capacity of Manager and Volunteers in Education from the Peninsula Community Legal Centre, thank you so much for being a guest on the Wordy Wrapping Hood here on RPPFM. And let's finish with this one. This is your other choice, a Mornington Peninsula resident and a guest in a couple of weeks on the Wordy Wrapping Hood. This is Mark Seymour, Hunters and Collectors. Throw your arms around me, Andrea. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much.
The fabulous Hunters and Collectors, Mark Seymour out front on this program in a couple of weeks' time. Throw your arms around me. The last choice, final choice from Andrea Staunton, who's been our guest today. Andrea, you wanted to come back on the mic and say how much you love Mark really quickly.
I do, and I just have to commend him for being such a wonderful ambassador for asylum seekers and refugees, especially with the lead up to World Refugee Day, which is on the 20th of June next week.
And if people want to get in touch with the Peninsula Community Legal Service, they can pop in. You're on the Nepean Highway in Frankston. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Tracy.